It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 150 years ago today, President Abraham Lincoln stood at the site of one of the most important battles of the American Civil War in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. A crowd of about 15,000 gathered to consecrate a cemetery for those who died for the Union cause. Lincoln's speech was brief, but had a lasting historical impact.
87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus so far nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here, dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
In his new book titled The Greatest Speech Ever, The Remarkable Story of Abraham Lincoln and His Gettysburg Address, Judge James L. Cotton Jr. looks at how the early life of Lincoln influenced the words he used in that famous speech. He joins us now by phone from the Knoxville, Tennessee area, where he presides as a judge over the General Sessions Court for Scott County, to talk about the significance of the Gettysburg Address. Judge Cotton, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essphgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essphgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Judge Cotton, why is the Gettysburg Address considered to be such a powerful document?
Well, Paul, it's timeless. The Gettysburg Address has just as much meaning and relevance today as it did 150 years ago when Lincoln gave that beautiful speech. In the introduction of this piece, as many times as I have heard the Gettysburg Address and read it, it still brought cold chills down my back to hear it spoken. I was thinking about those two magnificent phrases that Lincoln has in those words: all men are created equal. And when he spoke of a government of, by, and for the people, and when he gave us those words, he really gave us a perfect, lasting blueprint for American democracy. I think those words are the hymn of American democracy. I noticed flipping through some literature, that in 1958, the French adopted that phrase, of, by, and for the people, into their own constitution. Those words are timeless.
It's interesting because as you hear the reenactment of the Gettysburg Address, and there's that part in there where he says that the words that are spoken here will be little noted, nor will they be long remembered. And, of course, the opposite is true, because here we are 150 years later, and many of us as school children, I can remember Mrs. Langsner's class at Fulton Elementary School on the east side of Pittsburgh, where we were taught in the fifth grade to remember, to memorize the Gettysburg Address. So obviously this has stayed with all of us.
Oh, boy. You know, I'd had the same school experience. It's interesting that after Lincoln gave the speech, Paul, it got mixed reviews. But during the next three or four decades after Lincoln's death, it was essentially overshadowed by the Emancipation Proclamation. I think a good litmus test of that is that out of the first 20 statues or monuments built to Lincoln following his assassination, 18 of those showed him with the Emancipation Proclamation in his hand. It wasn't until the early 20th century that the Gettysburg Address began to emerge as the profoundly iconic words we know today.
The Battle of Gettysburg had been waged that previous summer. Why did Lincoln choose to come to Gettysburg in the middle of November, especially when he could have sent somebody else to represent him?
On a personal level, I think Lincoln wanted to see the battlefields. You know, Lincoln's first vocation, his first successful vocation, was surveyor. And he had learned that the land will speak to you. And I think Lincoln wanted to go to Gettysburg. Undoubtedly, the land spoke to him. And those are the people I speak to today who go to Gettysburg. The land speaks to them. But on a higher plane, Lincoln knew that he had to go to Gettysburg to explain to the people, to all Americans, why this terrible, bloody war had to go on and why it had to be finished. There was terrible war fatigue among Americans. I would compare it to the war fatigue that people felt at the end of the Vietnam War. Also, Lincoln knew that he had to explain to the American people why the Union, the United States of America, had to be saved. And not only that, why slavery had to be brought to an end. Lincoln was fusing together the purposes of saving America and ending slavery. He was making it clear there could not be one without the other.
As he sat on the speaker's platform, Abraham Lincoln, who was by all accounts a humble man, was apprehensive about the words and the brevity of his forthcoming speech. Why is that?
No doubt he felt some anxiety. In those days there was a phrase among people called being at the little end of the horn. And in this program, Lincoln was at the little end of the horn. Preceding him was literally the most famous orator in the country, and that was Edward Everett. He was considered the heir apparent to Daniel Webster. And some people like to compare Everett's speech as being a blowhard, long, meaningless speech, and that Lincoln got up and did a perfect job. They like to compare Lincoln as a foil to Lincoln's long speech, Everett's long speech. But the truth is, Edward Everett did a beautiful job. He did exactly what was expected of him. So here Lincoln was, sitting on the platform, listening to the greatest speaker in the country do a superb job, by the way. So I think that raised anxiety for him as well.
And why did he keep the speech so short? We played the reenactment of the Gettysburg Address, and that was the entire address, under 2 minutes. So by any standard, whether it's in the 19th century or the 21st century, that is a short speech. Why was it so short?
Lincoln was hardwired in his educational process to be succinct and to the point. He was a compulsive revisionist, Paul, when he wrote his speeches. He liked to really thread the needle with as little as words as he could. He didn't like elevated, polished-up words. He loved words that threaded the needle of the listener. He loved to use words that people were raised on because he knew you could better connect that way. That speech has only 272 words, and he nailed it. You couldn't write a more perfect speech for that occasion and those circumstances in America than he did that day.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Judge James Cotton, author of The Greatest Speech Ever, The Remarkable Story of Abraham Lincoln and His Gettysburg Address. It is hitting bookstore shelves today on this 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. Did Lincoln think that did he have any idea at all that this would be the speech he would be most remembered for?
I think he hoped it would. I believe Lincoln went to Gettysburg hoping to change America. He didn't know if he could, but he knew that he had to somehow bind the people together. And it was a moment of American exceptionalism, in a way. Lincoln was endeavoring to extend Thomas Jefferson's concept of inalienable rights, that is, you know, God-given rights that were available to all people, all colors, all creeds, and extend them to 4 million people that were in slavery. That was a bold move in his time, and that was one of the reasons he felt compelled to go. Generally, Lincoln didn't like giving big formal speeches. In fact, he only gave 4 prepared formal speeches during his entire presidency. This was his first. And he didn't like leaving Washington during the war to give speeches. But despite all of those things, he knew and he was aware that this was a critical moment in time and he was going to have to hit the mark.
We've talked about the mixed reviews that the president received, President Lincoln received for the Gettysburg Address. What kind of reaction did he get from the people who were there listening to it live?
There are a good number of eyewitness accounts. They're very insightful. I think it's fair to say that those there who could hear, and there was probably a crowd approaching 20,000 people, did not necessarily understand Lincoln's concept of the new birth of freedom. But they loved what they heard. They knew the words were beautiful. It's like hearing an Italian aria, a beautiful song sung, and you might not understand the words. You just know it's beautiful. And the people in the crowd that day reacted very well. They thought they'd heard beautiful words. But you know, politics drove most journalism, and Lincoln's critical reviews were mixed. Those people that were on Lincoln's side of the politics gave him pretty good reviews. One called it a perfect gem. Those who were against Lincoln wrote terrible remarks. Some called him a despot. Others said he acted like a clown. One, I remember, said that he had thrown up vulgar jargon on the graves of his countrymen. So politics was just as rough back then as it is today.
Well, and even in Pennsylvania, which we're going to talk about to foreshadow a little of what we'll get into later in the program, the Harrisburg Patriot News, then known as the Patriot and Union, called Mr. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address silly remarks deserving a veil of oblivion. In writing about the Gettysburg Address, you look at the context of Lincoln's life story up until that point. How do you think his early years influenced the speech he would give?
I think there's no other life that compares to Lincoln's. When you look at the poverty, he was born on a dirt floor on a bed of bear skins and corn shucks. The poverty, the losing his mother at the age of 9, he helped build her coffin. He witnessed the death of his little brother, his older sister. He had only 1 year of education in his entire life. He taught himself the law. After he became an adult and a father, he witnessed the death of 2 sons. He battled depression. And, Paul, when you look at the poverty, the sadness, the suffering, the labor and the toil, and the hope of his human spirit, you see a person that I use a word in the book that's a little rare, and it's called unforgettable. Lincoln was unforgettable, and by that I mean he was probably the only person alive who could have got the country through that terrible apocalyptic conflict called the Civil War.
Our guest is Judge James Cotton, author of The Greatest Speech Ever, The Remarkable Story of Abraham Lincoln and His Gettysburg Address. Judge Cotton, you are based in Tennessee, and some may wonder how a native of the South became so enamored with President Lincoln, even with the passage of time. I'm sure you've grown up around some folks who haven't gotten over the Civil War where you are.
That's true. Tennessee succeeded from the Union, but the eastern part of Tennessee, where I now live, were sort of staunchly Union. And Lincoln had a fond connection to the people of East Tennessee. It led to the actual creation of a university here in the mountains called Lincoln Memorial University. So the people of Eastern Tennessee have always had a strong bond and an affection for Lincoln. For me personally, it started in grade school where we had a Gettysburg Address contest, and I entered it. I practiced and I practiced fall, and when it came time to the for the competition, I folded up like a lawn chair.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I butchered up a couple of lines, forgot some. I remember the kid that won, his mother had used mascara on his jaws and built him a stovepipe hat, but he should have won anyway. But even though I was much like the people in the crowd 150 years ago, even though I didn't understand the meaning, the deep meaning of those words, even as a young boy, I felt they had spiritual, mystical power. There was something about the beauty and the cadence and the rhythm of those words that was special. And I was hooked. I've been a Lincoln fan ever since.
Senator Howard Baker wrote the foreword for your book, and in it he said, 150 years later, we still yearn to know more about Abraham Lincoln, to better understand him, and that perhaps we can never fully know Lincoln. What do you think?
Senator Baker is a great Lincoln fan, and he wrote an exquisite foreword, for which I was very grateful. My Lincoln chats with him are priceless. About 35 years after Lincoln died, he had a very close friend named Noah Brooks. He was a journalist and advisor, and Noah Brooks wrote the famously myopic prediction that all the Lincoln stories are told. There's nothing new to know about Lincoln. And here we are, over 150 years later, over 17,000 books have been written about Abraham Lincoln. I think he's second only in subject to Shakespeare and Jesus. And we still don't know everything there is to know about him. Lincoln's good friend Billy Herndon, his law partner for 14 or 15 years, said, "I have come to the conclusion that Lincoln is quite a mysterious man, and that no one can ever know him." And I think it's true. Lincoln was mysterious. He engages us. And as time goes on, we continue to learn more and more.
My guest has been Judge James Cotton, author of The Greatest Speech Ever, The Remarkable Story of Abraham Lincoln and His Gettysburg Address. And it is hitting store shelves today on the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. Judge Cotton, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure, Paul.
Coming up, we'll discuss the recent apology issued by the Harrisburg Patriot News for initially calling the Gettysburg Address silly. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. As we mark the 150th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address during the Civil War, it's hard to imagine anyone panning the speech, especially a newspaper in Pennsylvania. But on November 24, 1863, 5 days after President Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address, the Harrisburg Patriot News, then known as the Patriot and Union, called Mr. Lincoln's words, quote, "silly remarks deserving a veil of oblivion," end quote. Uncomfortable living with this part of its legacy, the Patriot News last week delivered an apology for, in its words, having got Lincoln's Gettysburg Address utterly, jaw-droppingly wrong. I'm joined now by phone from Gettysburg by Patriot News opinion page editor John Misick, where he is covering events honoring the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. John, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. What's it like to be in Gettysburg today?
Very cold and very crowded, but it's a great morning. There's a lot, you know, there's thousands of people here on the lawn, lots of Civil War reenactors walking around representing various regiments. Had a chance to bump into both Robert E. Lee and President Lincoln, so it's just that kind of day.
I guess. So, John, who on your staff went back to look through the archives and discovered this scathing review of the Gettysburg Address from 1863?
Well, the funny thing, it's kind of part of the Patriot News' DNA. It's one of these things you learn when you take a job here, that 150 years ago we had the lack of judgment to pan one of the single greatest pieces of writing in the history of American politics. And when the anniversary of the battle approached last summer, we began talking about what we could do to redress that. We decided the battle was the wrong time, but with the anniversary of the speech coming up, we decided that was the right time. And my deputy editor, Matthew Zenzi, as you noted, just hit it out of the park, capturing both the spirit and tone of President Lincoln's original address as we tried to redress the wrongs of our predecessors.
Now, was anybody on the staff aware that such a critique had existed, or that anything like this had been written by the Patriot News?
Well, as I said, we all knew it existed, and it was kind of one of these Bigfoot things that we knew it was there, but we just had to go hunt down the actual text for it. And both Matt Zenzi and my colleague Don Gilliland went spelunking into the archives and came up with a bit of the offending bit of microfilm with those words. And sure enough, there it was.
And what was your reaction when you found it, when you read this?
We all knew that we'd panned it, but we didn't realize that we'd panned it quite so enthusiastically. But I mean, when you put it in the context of the time, the Patriot Union was what was known as a copperhead newspaper. It was pro-Democrat, it was opposed to the war, and critical of President Lincoln. And you know, as you know, in those days, American papers wore their partisanship on their sleeves. So if you were a Democrat, you read one paper. If you were a Republican, you read another. And this, the Patriot Union being a Democratic paper, took a fairly dim view of President Lincoln's remarks.
So when you embarked on this search, did you know right away that, well, we're going to have to print some sort of an apology? Was that the intention? Or was it after you read the words and saw how harsh the critique was that someone then decided we have to retract this?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things like, you know, these kind of things are sitting in the news being like, you know, it would be a great idea to do if we apologized for the remarks of our predecessors. It was never like one of these, like, oh, my God, we've committed a sin against history sort of deals. It was, you know, I mean, we were not the only Pennsylvania newspaper. The York Daily Record or its predecessor also panned the paper. And, you know, President Lincoln's remarks were kind of overlooked at the time. And it was only through the fullness of history that it became appreciated for the genius that they were. So we knew we had to do something about it, but we didn't want to be sort of plodding and obvious. So we went for the lighthearted approach instead. And my gosh, it worked.
And what has the reaction been so far?
Well, put it to you this way. Before I talked to you today, I was doing an interview with BBC World Service via Skype in London. BBC Scotland kept me awake at 1 o'clock this morning so I could do an interview with their breakfast show. It's literally been the retraction heard around the world. I mean, we've been getting calls from just about everywhere. It's been amazing.
Well, Saturday Night Live even worked in a skit where Seth Meyers interviews the author of the scathing review, a character named Jebediah Atkinson, played by Taron Killam. And this is a clip from last Saturday night. Let's listen.
So, Jebediah, you were actually underwhelmed by the President Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, calling it silly and saying the history would soon forget it.
Correct.
How do you feel about the newspaper's retractions?
I stand by my words. They're cowards, Seth. In fact, my first draft was much harsher, and I was told to tone it down.
Oh, wow. So what was the first draft?
Would you like to hear it?
Sure.
It goes as such. 4 snores and 7 yawns ago, this reviewer watched the president's speech at Gettysburg, and let's be honest, Abe, you dropped a real Lincoln log. You know what the real Gettysburg address is? 115 West Boring Street. And then there's the venue, a field, great acoustics. Sorry if I couldn't hear you, I was in the second row.
Wow, you didn't like it at all.
I did not. What's to like? The world with little note, nor long remember what we say here, oof. With dialogue that clunky, I'm surprised he was shot by an actor. Oh, is that too soon?
That's SNL's Taron Killam playing with obvious embellishment Jebediah Atkinson, who allegedly wrote the scathing review of the Gettysburg Address for the then Harrisburg Patriot and Union. And we're talking with the now Harrisburg Patriot News opinion page editor John Misick. John, what did you think of that skit?
Yeah, I'll cross that one off the bucket list, right? The minute you get made fun of on Saturday Night Live, what's left? I mean, the Pulitzer looks kind of like peanuts by comparison. It was... It was really something. The funny thing was, this is the one night that I actually doze off during Saturday Night Live that they make fun of my newspaper. My phone like blew up with text messages and tweets like within 20 seconds of that sketch ending, and you know, I had to go hunt it down online the next morning to find out what all the fuss was about.
So
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, it was just really something. But go ahead. Yeah.
You had no idea it was coming?
No, it's not like Lorne Michaels called me up and said, "Hey, you know what we're going to do on Saturday night?" No, I was as surprised as anybody else.
So, was the editorial page writer's name really Jebediah Atkinson?
It was unsigned. I'm thinking our friends at SNL had some fun with it, and the actor just, you know, hit it out of the park. It was fantastic.
They came up with the name.
Yeah.
And have your readers responded to the apology issued by the paper?
Oh yeah, the readers of Penn Live are not shy about responding to anything. There were some who got the joke, and others, well, frankly, who did not get the joke and thought we were being amazingly hypocritical for apologizing and just kneecapping our predecessors who, you know, took the stand that they did at the time. But it's important to stress here for, you know, anyone who's listening that it was pretty much a goof. I mean, that we wanted to be very – it was an important thing to address historically, but we also wanted to come at it in a way that was going to enlighten and entertain. And unfortunately, not everybody got the gag.
Are you surprised, though, that people were standing by this signed, unsigned critique – a negative critique of the Gettysburg Address, which probably a lot of them didn't agree with or wouldn't agree with today?
You come to find out that there's, in fact, a very active neo-Confederate or neo-secessionist movement of people who actively dislike President Lincoln 150 years later and who were sharply critical of him for, you know, what they thought was a trampling on of states' rights by forcing the Union to stay together. And there were other people who thought, again, that we shouldn't have tampered with history, that we should have let the words of our predecessors stand. But hey, you know, it's our historical record. We can correct it if we like.
And having tampered with history, as you say, as you put it, do you feel, or do those at the paper feel, as though you've exercised some sort of an historical burden from the legacy of your great and longstanding newspaper?
We all woke up on Monday morning with our shoulders a little bit lighter and a spring in our step. So I think we've gotten rid of that particular demon. It was something I thought that we all felt needed to be done. And again, it was something the staff was really pleased with, and we're glad that it came out the way that it did.
Harrisburg Patriot News opinion page editor John Micek joining us from Gettysburg. John, before I let you go, is there any – we've been hearing that President Obama is not going to go to Gettysburg, even though he's been criticized for making the decision not to come. But there were rumors that he might reconsider. What are you hearing there?
I had to leave the ground when I left. It was still going to be Interior Secretary Jewell. I've not heard anything to the contrary, but that's been a little while.
And this may be something that yet another U.S. president is criticized for in connection with Gettysburg.
It could well be.
John, thank you again for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, Paul, anytime.
Once again, John Micek is the opinion page editor for the Harrisburg Patriot News. Coming up, a look at Pittsburgh's role in the history of Czechoslovakia. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.